Blog Talk Radio. Today's date, it's February 1st. That's right, I said February, not February. February 1st, the year 2011, Washington, D.C., the United States of America. Planet Earth, and we're the third planet from the sun. No man knows the day or the hour of Christ's return, but the scriptures have given us signs that point toward the second coming. And I'm always very clear in being confused. And I don't mean to mock scripture or Jesus, but I've always been a little bit confused about the comings and goings. Because the way I see it, Christ died, he already came back, so that would be the second coming, because when he was born, that was the first coming. So when he comes back again, wouldn't that be the third coming? I don't know. Nevertheless, Christ himself taught at length about the signs leading up to the end of the age. And here I have compiled a brief collection of the specific signs we are told to be on the lookout for. One is a classic, comes from the book of Mark 13:7, and I'm going to paraphrase it. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Now, more people have died in armed conflict in the 20th century alone than in all recorded history. There are constant news reports about brewing conflicts around the world. As we've seen in the news today, Egypt is on the brink. And it always seems that there is trouble on the horizon somewhere, specifically in the Middle East. Now, Christ tells us that these things have to happen, that these events will set the stage for the coming Antichrist and final showdown between Israel and the world. Now, the Brotherhood of Islam stated just the other day that if they take power in Egypt, then Israel is doomed. Israel will be their first target. America will come next. How does this play into politics? People will ask. Some will ask. Well, our current current administration has indicated that the Brotherhood of Islam will have a seat at the table if they renounce violence. Huh. So, the current administration has endorsed the Brotherhood of Islam, even though the Brotherhood has stated emphatically and quite clearly, there's no room for interpretation, that they will destroy Islam or go to war with Islam. Now, never mind that during the Seven-Day War, Egypt got stomped on by Israel. There's no reason to believe that that won't happen again. But this is why I'm having this discussion today, or this is the topic of my show today. Because what is happening in Israel and what the current political administration here in America is advocating ties directly into biblical prophecy. And I'm going to give examples of just that. Now, the next sign is the army of the King of the East, Revelation 16.12, my favorite. The sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates. Euphrates. Don't even ask me to spell it again without looking at it on this piece of paper I wrote it down on. And its water was dried up to prepare the way for the kings from the east. Now, although some of the apostles, although some of the Apostle John's prophecies in the book of Revelations are difficult to understand from our current perspective, the main consensus for this prophetic verse is that an army comprising of the kings of the East will move into the Middle East at or near the battlegrounds of Armageddon. The drying up the river that will usher these armies into the Middle East will be an event easily recognized. You mean like the events that are occurring in the Middle East as I speak? Perhaps. Next on my list is nation rising against nation, famine, and earthquakes. Matthew 24.7. A nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. Is there any clearer sign than what is happening in the Middle East right now? Now, there has been marked conflict on the earth for about as long as we have kept recorded history. We have had a few instances in the 20th century where nation has truly risen against nation. We have seen famines, pestilence, and earthquakes on the rise exponentially in the last 50 years as a whole. According to one stat, earthquakes alone have increased in frequency and intensity some 2,000% since Israel returned to the land in 1948. Think about it. Global government and revised Roman Empire. And that's next on my list. Revelation 13:1 through 2. And the dragon stood on the shore of the sea. And I saw the beast coming out of the sea. He had 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns on his horns. Ugly. And on each head, a blasphemous name. The beast I saw resembled a leopard. The beast that's being described doesn't sound like a leopard to me, though. But nevertheless, but had feet like those of a bear, and a mouth like that of a lion. The dragon gave the beast his power, and his throne, and great authority. Revelation 17:12 through 13. The 10 horns you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast. They have one purpose and will give their power and authority to the beast. Now, the prophet John also described a one world global government. Does that sound familiar? That will arise and rule the world by dividing it into 10 regions, described as the revived Roman Empire. The European Union will probably play significance as one of the first key steps toward this. Remember, we have the European Union that is advocating a one world global government. We see that the current political administration here in the United States is ceding our sovereignty to the European Union, piece by piece. So if the prophet John has predicted this, and we see that it is coming to pass, is that not yet another sign? This is how Bible prophecy, this is a good example of how Bible prophecy and current political times meld together to give us a clear sign that we're living in the last days and time. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, you know, pay your bills. You know, it's not yet. Because, I mean, you still got to, you know, don't go out looting and pillaging and burning. You know, don't charge up those credit cards too high. Because it could be a while. Yet. Now, the Pope himself reportedly has referred to the European Union as a revived Roman Empire. Let's move on. Luke 21 through 24, Israel returns as a nation. They will fall by the sword and will be taken as prisoners to all nations. Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. So, what does that mean? What does that mean in normal folks? Jerusalem had been trampled by the Gentiles for centuries since the Romans sacked them in AD 700. AD 70. I got that wrong. History was made once again in both 1948 and 67 when Israel recaptured Jerusalem and solidified their stance in a unified and legitimate nation. And let's be clear. The time frame is 7 years from the start of the first tribulation. And I will try to narrow it down as best I can, because we've been hearing of wars and rumors of wars for quite some time now, and it's difficult to narrow down when the 7 years has begun, but I'll do my best. The final generation will see these events fulfilled. The final generation will see these events fulfilled. So, to the question from Mrs. C.R. Jones 3-2B, if the final generation will see these events fulfilled, and we turn on Fox News, fair and balanced, even MSNBC and CNN, which hardly anybody watches anymore, you will see the events unfolding. So, to answer the question, the time perspective is now. He told them this parable. Look at the fig tree and all the trees. When they sprout leaves, you can see for yourselves and know that summer is near. Even so, when you see these things happening, you know that the kingdom of God is near. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Yeah. And it's starting right here, right now. Now, there's some debate over what Christ intended. Some maintain that this prophecy, the one I just spoke of, related to the specific destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in AD 70, while others maintain that this prophecy has ecclesiastical significance. If the latter is true, this would mean that the final generation would not pass away until these end-time prophecies are fulfilled. In biblical language, a generation can span anywhere from 40 to 70 years. So my question would be, rhetorically, could we be this close to the end? The next. Daylight hours are shortened due to intense heat. Revelation 16:8-9. The fourth angel poured out his bowl on the sun, and the sun was given power to scorch people with fire. They were seared by the intense heat, and they cursed the name of God, who had control over these plagues, but they refused to repent and glorify him. Mm-hmm. Now, during the time of the Great Tribulation, plagues are to be unleashed on all of us, as it was during Exodus. As a testament to God's judgment and the wickedness of y'all during this time, God will actually shorten the daylight hours because of the sun's scorching heat. Well, could this be the result of ozone depletion, skin cancer, you know, related to overexposure of UV rays? Because it's on the rise globally. Now, next. Storm activity and natural phenomena become increasingly worse. Luke 21:25-26. There will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars on earth. Nations will be in anguish and perplexity, perpinquity, perplexity, at the roaring and tossing of the sea. Oh, yeah. Men will faint from terror. Well, they're already doing that. Apprehensive of what is coming to the world, for the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Damn. Now, the alarming increase in hurricanes, tropical storms, tornadoes, and tsunamis, which may more accurately be contributed to earthquake activity, since the end of the 20th century have been noted. The death toll due to natural events alone in the last 30 years has been significant. We've all seen it. Famine and pestilence increase. Luke 21:11. There will be great earthquakes, famines, and pestilence in various places, and fearful events and great signs from heaven. Bend over and kiss your ass goodbye. Matthew 24:7-8. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginnings of birth pains. Okay, wrapping it up and rounding it up. Revelation 6:8. I looked, and there before me was a pale horse. Its rider was named Death, and Hades was following close behind him. They were given power over a fourth of the earth to kill by sword, famine, and plague, and by the wild beast of the earth. Now, death related to famine and disease have increased exponentially in the last 100 years. We see the occurrence of new diseases all the time, and there doesn't seem to be any end in sight. That wraps up the signs that the end is near. And it just so happened to coincide with the election of Barack Hussein Obama, a black president. Now, the last time we had a black president, it was in a movie where a giant meteor came down, giant rock came down and smashed the earth. What was the name of that movie? Morgan Freeman was the president. Why is it that when you put a black man in office, presidency, the earth comes to end? That was tongue-in-cheek. So, Barack Hussein Obama was interviewed on the campaign trail by none other than Ellen DeGeneres. That dude, Ellen, interviewed Barack Hussein Obama about health care. And here is what that moron had to say, and these words are going to come back to haunt his black ass.
Let's talk about the flyers in Ohio that Hillary says that they didn't represent her properly. They misrepresent her. Did they, and what do you say about that?
Well, obviously, I think that they represented her position properly, which is that she supported in the past NAFTA, which has been pretty hard on Ohio. And we've had an ongoing discussion about health care. Both of us want to provide health care to all Americans. There's a slight difference, and her plan is a good one, but she mandates that everybody buy health care. She'd have the government force every individual to buy insurance, and I don't have such a mandate because I don't think the problem is that people don't want health insurance, it's that they can't afford it. So I focus more on lowering costs, and this is a modest difference, but it's one that she's tried to elevate, arguing that because I don't force people to buy health care that I'm not insuring everybody. Well, if things were that easy, I could mandate everybody buy a house, and that, you know, and that would solve you know, the problem of homelessness. It doesn't.
Well.
Now, during this, during the oral arguments, in front of Judge Vinson, just the other day, the government argued that in order for the new health care law to be effective, in order for the new health care law to be funded, the individual mandate was paramount, was essential to the new law being effective. That, yes, forcing every single American to purchase health care was in fact essential to the law. So what happened? Now, I'm going to give Barack Hussein Obama a little slack here, because his lazy ass probably didn't read the bill. He probably paid no attention whatsoever to any of the verbiage that wasn't in front of his teleprompter. Now, unless that hideous hag Nancy Pelosi put the entire nearly 3,000-page health care bill on a teleprompter, Barack Obama was not going to read it. So chances are he didn't really understand this fact. But Nancy did. You see, I thank the good Lord above that Nancy Pelosi and most of those Democrats who pushed this bill through to become law are complete idiots. Complete. Because had they had the slightest bit of intellect, they would have figured out some other way to fund this monstrosity. But I'm glad that they didn't, because forcing every single American to purchase health insurance is going to be the death knell of this new health care law. And I'm digging every single minute of it. They were bound to do something truly stupid. And it was just a matter of time. And I love it. Mr. Obama is supremely lazy. And that's going to be a problem for him down the road as well. The guy is lazy. He'd rather sit on the beach having a tasty treat, shirtless, looking like a 10-year-old boy, not a single hair on his chest, not manly at all, and just chill, go on vacation, party like it's 1974, than to actually get off his ass and do something productive. Remember, as a state senator in my home state of Illinois, he rarely showed up for votes in the state house. And when he did, he voted 93 times, 93% of the time, present. So he didn't vote either way. It was just present. So now he moves on to the Senate, the National Senate, and he rarely votes. And when he does, 58% of the time he voted, you guessed it, present. And now he's thrown old Hosni Mubarak under the bus when poor Hosni was the only one, only leader in the region standing between Israel and total war, World War III. Bam, boom. Because if the Muslim Brotherhood take control in the region, all hell is going to break loose. Get underneath your bed. Kiss your ass goodbye. Or at least get ready for the big show. Because there's going to be one. And hopefully, I'll be involved somehow. So, that's all I have to say about that. I'm not going to do Life as a Box of Chocolates right now. I hope that many of you are celebrating Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday anniversary. I know I am. I shed a tear when I think about the great man being gone. Yeah, I'm tearing up right now. But I'm gonna try to be professional. All right. Here's an interesting little aside right now. Let's try to lighten the mood a little bit. Not known to be diet food, Michelle Obama hails the great barbecue in North Carolina. This cow, Michelle Obama, who has got to be one of the ugliest first ladies in the history of American politics, is telling us all to slack up off the salt, to slack up off the junk food. $2 billion going down the tubes to put salad bars and buffet and nutritional foods in grade school and high schools. And no sweets, no treats, no goodies of any kind. Called both her ugly, hideous daughters, Sasha and Malika, those two hideous daughters of his. Called them out as being too fat. But in a letter sent out just the other day, yesterday, about the 2012 Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, the First Lady touts the great barbecue of the Queen City. Studies have shown that a barbecue meal weighs in at a whopping 2,500 calories. She goes on to write, "I am thrilled to make sure you are the first to hear some very exciting news. Charlotte, North Carolina will host the 46th Democratic National Convention in 2012. Charlotte is a city marked by its southern charm, warm hospitality, and an up-by-the-bootstraps mentality that has propelled the city forward as one of the fastest growing in the South. Vibrant, diverse, and full of opportunity, the Queen City is home to innovative, hardworking folks with big hearts and open minds And, of course, great barbecue. Barack and I spent a lot of time in North Carolina doing the campaign. From the Atlantic coast to the research triangle in the Smoky Mountains. And everywhere in between. They were everywhere in between. I'd hate to be anywhere in between with that ugly, hideous woman. Barack enjoyed Asheville so much when he spent several days preparing for the second presidential debate that our family vacationed there in 2009. Hell, your family vacations everywhere. That's all you morons do is vacation. Barack Hussein Obama and your ugly, hideous self and your two ugly children have vacationed more in the last 2 years than I have vacationed my whole life. And I exaggerate not. So, the First Lady of the United States of America is telling us to lay off the chow while she herself will be smacking those big old lips on some barbecue in North Carolina. You know, this woman is reminding me so much of Marie Antoinette. Because she seems to be saying, let them eat cake. I mean, all the time. Let them eat cake. Now, because I'm a historian and one of the best in the business, I must correct the notion that Marie Antoinette actually said, let them eat cake. Because she didn't say that. What Marie Antoinette actually said was, when told that the masses were hungry, she said, let them eat bread. But in French, well, there was something lost in the translation. Let's put it that way. Because in France, cake and bread are the same thing. So what she said was, let them eat bread. And then she had some of her flunkies go out and throw out some bread. And the folks gobbled it up. But it was made to be seen as though she was, like, mocking the folks. But in truth, she wasn't. You know, I have no love for Marie Antoinette, none whatsoever, but I just like to correct those little things. By the way, while we're on the subject, Bogey never said, play it again, Sam. He said, play it. Play it, Sam. If she can stand it, so can I. Okay? I just want to get that off my chest. Oh, no. Elvis, the king of rock and roll, never said, the only thing a blank to blank can do is shine my shoes. He never said that. And James Cagney never said, you dirty rat. No, never. Okay, I want to talk about hope. I want to talk about change. I want to talk about investing. I want to talk about all three, hope, change, and invest. You know, I missed the middle section of Obama's State of the Union address when I took a break to read all of War and Peace. But I gather he never got around to what I was hoping he'd say. And that is, what the hell was I thinking? Now, the national debt is officially, or unofficially, $14 trillion. The Democrats won't stop spending. The president, President Nero, gave us a long, gaseous speech about his Stradivarius. I feel so Southern whenever I watch a Democrat give a State of the Union address. And not just because it makes me want to secede, consternating the rest of the family, my Kentucky, my southern mama, always talk back to the TV. I do it only when a Democrat is giving a speech. And if liberals don't like or didn't like Samuel Alito mouthing the words "not true," Justice Samuel Alito, they should be really happy I wasn't in the House chamber that night. All I kept hearing was, "Ann pays more." That's all I ever hear when Democrats start in with all that investing talk. Apparently, the government will be investing in education, investing in technology, investing in roads, and investing in lots and lots of government workers, and pays more. And pays more, and pays more. Obama compared investing in education to our sending a man to the moon after the Russians launched Sputnik. Now, who was the president who really gutted spending on NASA? Yeah, it was Obama. I mean, NASA is just a big empty warehouse somewhere in Florida right now. Yeah. But, you know, those are facts. We can't talk. We don't want to ruin it with those nasty old facts. So Obama reminded us of the glory days of the space program. But now he's talking now he's taking that money that he took from the space program and funneling it into public school teachers. As the Democrats say, if we can put a man on the moon, why can't we hire another 10,000 public school teachers? Also, that idiot talked about solar panels. Obama said the government was already investing in solar panels. Well, thank God. Thank God for that. That is a total relief. You know, this must be how the president who brought us recovery summer for that 1 week until, you know, it was revealed that we were actually not recovering. This is how Mr. Recovery Summer is going to dig us out of the second Great Depression by getting us all together to build solar panel, taking my tax dollars and yours to invest in building solar panels. Is this guy an idiot or what? Come on. Where's the brilliance here? Where is the brilliance? Isn't this guy supposed to be brilliant? His answer to our nation's problems are to build solar panels, clean energy, and high-speed trains. Is that all? And hire some teachers who, once they gain tenure, can't be fired. And they can suck all to be damned. And don't teach our kids anything at all. And still get paid all their jack. So that's the plan, Mr. Brilliant Anointed One. You know, I wonder why no private lender considered solar panels a wise investment. I mean, I have a solar generator. I mean, it's a really cool device. It's got a little solar panel thing on it, and I keep it outside, you know, during the summertime to power up my computers and stuff, so that I can take a little bit of the burden off the electric bill, because my electric bills are high. I mean, I'm talking somewhere in the $400, $500 a month range, because I run a lot of electronics out of this place. So the solar panel thing kind of takes the sting out a little bit, but they're not really mass produced. So why is it that private sectors aren't really building those things in mass quantities? Why? Because the damn things are unreliable. That's why. I mean, I have this device, and it works, but it has severe limitations. I'm going to tell you that right now. I got to put that damn thing out in the sun, and if there's no sun, guess what? It's not working. So Obama's going to go ahead and invest in this stuff, though, because he believes that this is going to solve all our problems. We're going to build some solar stuff, some clean energy, some green stuff. While we're on the subject of, why I'm on the subject of green, remember when, I mean, we have a lot of fads, don't we? Everything's very cyclical here in the United States of America. For example, just a couple of years ago, it was all about carbs. It was all about carbohydrates and how if you wanted to lose a few pounds, well, stay away from the carbs. Remember that? What the hell happened to the carbs now? Folks are chowing down on carbs. And that whole Atkins diet, is that guy dead or what? Because that was important too. So we were doing the whole carbs thing. I go on and on. And now nobody's talking about carbs anymore. Now we're talking about going green. And what the hell does that mean? So I guess for another 18 months or so, we'll be talking about, quote, going green, end quote, and then it'll be beyond to something else. So I'm waiting for this whole going green thing to subside so we can get on to the next flight of fancy. I guess people who work for the government, well, I guess they're just smarter. And that's why they want to build solar stuff and high-speed rail. And all these private companies, you know, they said, no, I don't think I want to do those solar panels. Duh. Because I got a little bit of jack. Maybe I'll invest in some solar stuff. No, they don't actually work all that well, I'm telling you right now. Shh, be quiet. Because Obama's going to invest a whole bunch of our jack in solar stuff and high-speed rail, and they're not going to work. So people who work for the government are smarter than me and you. And we're so lucky to have them investing our money for us. Poor Warren Buffett and all those other billionaires, they didn't get in on the ground floor of the green stuff, green jobs, solar stuff, and high-speed rail. Obama talked in his horrible speech about high-speed rail. Can you imagine that? What the hell? Is he the president or a CEO of some failing company? I'm scratching my head right now, literally. Remember how massive government investments gave rise to the telephone? No? You don't remember that? Because if the government had invested in telephone, it probably wouldn't have worked. Remember how government gave investment into the light bulb, the automobile, the airplane, the personal computer? No, the government didn't invest in any of that. Those are like real regular folks, regular people investing in those things. Companies, inventors. Mr. Obama, you idiot. You were not a professor like me. You were an instructor, which meant that if I were at the University of Chicago when you were there, you would have been my flunky. You would have gone to get my coffee. And rightly so. Mr. Obama, you are a moron without one shred of actual common street smarts or sense. Stick to providing for the common defense of this great nation and whatever little executive chores you got going on, and leave the inventing and investing and spending and all of that to people like me and other folks out there, anybody except you. Mr. Obama, massive government spending gave us two things that suck right now. That's Amtrak and the TSA. Talk about high-speed rail. The government runs Amtrak. Amtrak consistently, year after year after year, loses millions upon millions of dollars. And more of our tax dollars are poured into running Amtrak and keeping it running. So much to the extent that just 5 years ago, there was serious talk of selling off Amtrak to the private sector piece by piece because the government couldn't or wouldn't continue to pour money down the drain to support antiquated, horrible Amtrak. And I'm going to tell you something right now. I love Amtrak, but damn, if it were in the hands of the private sector, which a lot of folks were wanting to do a few years ago, it would be so much better. But guess what? The government runs it. And you can tell that you get yourself on one of those trains and take a ride. And it's so obvious that the government runs that. And also, the government gave us the TSA. And those guys are just the dumbest. The only thing Obama vowed to cut in that horrible speech was earmarks. Wow. The guy with the ears of Dumbo is against earmarks. Those flappy, fat ears of his, he's against earmarks. I mean, there's got to be some humor there somewhere. The same president who quadrupled our deficit by giving money away to his union folks, his union buddies, Wall Street cronies, and government workers is now lecturing us about earmarks. This is a bit like being scolded by Charlie Sheen for ordering a second wine cooler. You knew it was bad when Don McKean leapt up, and enthusiastically applauded. Now, the last time I saw John McCain applaud Obama like that was when he debated him. Obama said, "We are the nation that put cars in the driveways and computers in offices, the nation of Edison and the Wright brothers, of Google and Facebook." And then, and then the government outlawed Edison's great invention, made the Wright brothers' air travel insufferable, filed antitrust charges against Microsoft, and made cars too expensive to drive by prohibiting oil exploration here on our own soil. And right now, right this very minute, is desperately trying to regulate the internet. Think about all of that I just said, because it's all true. You can't buy a regular light bulb anymore. You're done. You got to buy a little curly fries light bulbs now. Regular light bulb has been outlawed. But I got a whole bunch. I got a stash. If you want some, contact me later after the show or call the show's hotline number, 877, appropriately enough, 666-9305, and I'll give you some of my stash for free. On the bright side, though, President Al Gore would have actually outlawed the cars in the driveway themselves. Yeah, I like those curly bulbs. They're cute. But damn it all to hell. I'll be damned if the government, i.e. Dumbo Obama, is going to tell me which light bulbs I can use. And it is true that you can buy standard light bulbs for now. I embellished that just a little bit. But they are being outlawed. There is not legislation in the House or the Senate. No. It's one of those damn czars. I can't recall which one of them who is putting out an edict that we will no longer be able to use those standard regular light bulbs, that from now on we will have to use the curly fries light bulbs, the pigtail light bulbs. You know, one thing about Obama's speech that I especially enjoyed was his pitch for high-speed trains, because that made him seem or appear to be just as dumb as everyone else is starting to get the idea that he is. Now, mind you, he received no bump in the polls for his speech, and there's really good reason for that. And part of the reason why he received no bump in the polls was because of stupid pitches like this. You don't have to receive a pat down if we invest in high-speed rail. You don't have to fly. You can take the train and get there. He didn't say where there was. Almost as fast as flying, and you don't have to receive the pat-downs. My dog can tell a better joke than that moron. Almost nobody laughed. Not even that idiot Joe Biden laughed at that. That feeble attempt at humor. I know a dead person who can tell a better joke or deliver a better punchline than Barack Hussein Obama. And no, you won't have to receive a pat down on one of Obama's high speed trains. At least until one of those damn Muslims who is part of our quote, American family, end quote, blows one up. At which point, they'll be staffed with armies of genitalia fondling, unionized TSA agents, all courtesy of our public funds. Still, I can't wait for Obama's America, an America where I can use lightning fast, high speed internet to file electronically for my unemployment benefits. Or better yet, I can ditch my old oil-powered car and take a sunlight and water-powered high-speed train to the unemployment office. Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I'm signing off for now. I've had a great time with this show today. Thank you so much for listening, and I will be back. I love y'all, and thank you for listening, and we'll talk more tomorrow. Good night. Thank you.